go west there and call me. And with an instruction like that, what else could we do? We've called him. Hello, Peter. Hope you're there.
All right, Scott. Yes, I'm here. How are you doing?
Fine. Thanks very much indeed. It's great that you've come online today. But just to tell everybody, you're a singer-songwriter, Brit Award winner. You're one half of the hugely successful Go West band. And before we talk about your up-and-coming tour with Hugh and Cry and the Christians, which kicks off later in the year, and your new solo album, Riding the Blinds, which, of course, we'll play a track from at the end of the interview. Just wanted to go back. As we said just now, you're part of Go West, but you're also a solo artist. You were the lead singer of Manfred Mann's Earth Band. When did you realise you could sing, and what's your first musical memory?
Well, I was in the school choir, and my very first musical memory is being in the company of my grandmother, who had a dancette record player, you know, turntable and speaker.
Yes.
And she would play me South Pacific and Gilbert and Sullivan. So
a little different.
I don't think those influences are very apparent in my music today, but that's the first thing I can remember, yeah.
Now, you've got an incredible voice. Where did you get all your soul from?
Well, thank you. I think like any singer, really, especially when you start out, you're assimilating the influences and the style of the singers that you enjoy to listen to. And for me, strangely, again, you might not hear it very much in my voice contemporarily, but the first music I really fell in love with was reggae, because that was the fashion clique that I was in when I was at school. Jamaican music or late 60s, early 70s, and then Motown. And then the first guitarist, of course, my taste have changed a bit since then, but the first rock guitar player that I could listen to that made sense to my ears was Paul Kossoff in the band Free.
Paul Rodgers,
the singer in that band, in my opinion, is the finest male vocalist this country's ever produced. So he was a huge influence. And the first band, the pub band, if you like, that I was in my late teens, before we started writing any material, we just used to play a set of songs by Free. We didn't think of ourselves as a tribute band at the time, but I guess in this day and age, that's kind of what you would have called us, really.
Yeah. Now, Go West is yourself and Richard Drummey. How did you meet?
Well, around that time, actually, we were both in bands influenced by Free, and I read a review of Richard's band in a local paper. They were clearly the competition. I use that term loosely because I don't think either band was working very hard professionally. Mm-hmm. But they were clearly the competition, so I went along to have a look at them rehearsing, and I met Richard. He asked me if we had a demo. I played it to him, and he seemed to like what he heard, and we kind of became friends. We didn't start writing together for a long time after that. We just drank a lot of beer and
seems reasonable to me.
Together, and you know, my listening was quite specific at the time, and Richard reintroduced me to what Stevie Wonder was doing at the time, and a wide variety of artists. He had a big record collection, including the American West Coast artists at the time, the Doobie Brothers and the Eagles and Kenny Loggins and people like that. So that's what we did. We just spent a lot of time watching movies, listening to music. Then I got my first professional gig, again, using the term loosely, working on the Mecca circuit in Sheffield. And Richard had a day job, and every other couple of weeks he would drive up to Sheffield with all the new movies and the music he'd bought, and we'd just hang out. And it was around about that time that we first started to dabble in songwriting.
Mm. Now, you decided to go solo in 1994. What prompted that decision?
I wanted to live in L.A. First time I went to L.A., it was a very alien environment, but we spent so much time together writing, recording, promoting records, and I spent a lot of time in L.A., and so did Richard, by the way, and it felt like home to me, that and also the fact that, as I say, living in each other's pockets. I mean, I was already 29 when Go West signed their deal in 1985. So, you know, we were men, and you know, living so close together and spending so much time together, it took a toll on the friendship.
Oh, I didn't believe it.
Too much, you know. It's like being married, but without any of the good bits. So and it was just time. It was time to have a break. Richard, when he's asked this question, he always makes reference to the gang. It's time to leave the gang. But you know, we needed a break. I mean, Richard is arguably my closest friend.
Yes.
He always makes me laugh. He's got something funny to say. But we just needed a break, and as I say, I really wanted to live in LA, and we had made our Indian Summer album living together in a house on the record company ticket. Beautiful house,
yeah.
Beautiful surroundings, you know, living the dream in a way, but, you know, Richard was clearly ready to come back to the UK,
yes.
So that's what we did.
Right, so because, as you say, in 2005, you celebrated your 20th anniversary, so you never really broke up, and you then went ahead and did a 60-date tour.
Yes. Well, I mean, I came back to the UK finally in 2000. My dad wasn't very well, and I obviously had something of a time limit, and I wanted to spend some time with him, and I'm back in the UK. Our erstwhile manager got in touch and said, there's stuff you guys could be doing. I think it was around this time that the first of the 80s retrospective tours was getting underway. Boy George was involved in that one. I think my manager would have loved us to have been involved, but we didn't get on board with that one. But yeah, there was work. There was work to do, and I hadn't been working very much in LA. I've been having a wonderful time, but I hadn't been making any money.
Why not?
Yeah, so, well, as Aerosmith said, permanent vacation. That's what it was kind of like.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would have probably carried on if I could have afforded to do that. But I don't know if that's really true. I mean, obviously, music's what I want to do, and I hadn't been doing very much of it. I got back into the UK, as I said, hooked up again with Richard. We were working, and then soon we were writing, and we were back at it.
Because you went then on this 60-date tour. Then you went back on the road again in 2008 in Australia, along with solo albums and tours. What do you love about performing live, and what do you hate about being on the road?
Well, I always say about live performance, particularly now, because, you know, I'm not going to speak for Richard, you know, we're all different people, but psychologically, I don't think when I was younger that I was necessarily cut out to be a performer. I remember one fan, so-called, getting in touch, and on the one hand, being very complimentary about my voice, but saying at the same time that he'd seen Paul Young, who is an amazing live performer, around about the same time, and that Paul Young knocked me into a cocked hat performance-wise. And, you know, it's never nice to get that kind of criticism, but I think it was fair, you know. I don't slide around the stage on my knees, or at least I didn't. Actually, if I tried to do that now, I'd probably do myself an injury. But I said all that because now, obviously, with the passage of time and there's less pressure and you're not on the TV, chance would be a fine thing. I guess I've just relaxed into it a bit more. So, and, of course, you know, at the risk of stating the obvious, if I'm standing on a stage at Henley Rewind, for example, in front of 15,000 people and they're all singing the chorus of a song while I'm just standing there basking in the sunshine, it's not a bad job. I always say about live performance now, I earn my money when I'm sitting in a van at 3 o'clock in the morning on the motorway. You know, hour and a half you're on stage, as a recording engineer in America used to say, that's just cake. You know, it's the travelling that gets old, and it's not as glamorous as that hour and a half on stage might make you think.
No, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Now, when Go West exploded onto the music scene, what's it like for a musician to hear their song on the radio for the first time? Do you remember where you
fantastic.
Were?
Fantastic. You know, that was the realisation of a dream. And we talked about this recently. At the time, Richard was driving me in what we used to laughingly refer to as the Go West Mobile, which was an old yellow Fiat with the driver's door tied on with a bit of rope, because that's how much money we had. And we were driving across Kew Bridge in Surrey, and the song came on the radio. I think it was Andy Peebles played We Close Our Eyes for the first time, and we stopped. We stopped the car, and we just, you know, we had a moment. It was
fantastic.
It was a great moment. Yeah, it's just, you know, you can hardly believe it's happening, really.
Now, going back to music writing, what's that process like for you? Do you get the lyrics first or the tune, or is each song different?
Each song is a little bit different. We tend to be looking for titles. Certainly, that's usually that gives the lyrical direction of the song. But definitely, especially writing together as a collaboration, the lyrics are often the most difficult part, and so therefore we leave it to us. So we'll, you know, we might be starting with a rhythm. More recently, for our current album 3D, the writing process would be that I would be at Richard's. Richard's got a purpose-built studio at his house, and I'll be playing guitar, not very well. Richard will be playing bass a lot better, and we'll just fool around. They used to call it jamming. until we come up with something that we think, you know, oh, that's got potential.
Yeah.
And then record it immediately and then start fooling around with melodies. And once we've got a melody, and by that time, hopefully a title, that's when we start working on the lyrics.
Now, as we mentioned at the outset, you're off on tour again with Hue and Cry and the Christians, which starts in October. Are you a fan of their music? Have you worked with Hue and Cry and the Christians before?
Not often, but yes, I've seen both these bands. You know, the Christians vocally are really strong, and I remember very well, actually. I think I'd been away promoting Go West's difficult second album, and I came home. It was around the time that Jules Holland was presenting The Tube on the television, and Hue and Cry were on with their first single, which I think was I Refuse. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was Labour of Love. I think Labour of Love was the second single.
Right.
And, you know, as a singer, I often look at new acts and think, yeah, okay, well, that singer's not really for me. But I saw Pat Kane and thought, yeah, that's the real thing right there. I always, you know, I know people have different tastes, one man's meat and all that, but I saw them and thought, yeah, that's the real deal.
Now, you've got a new album out, Riding the Blinds, which is your fifth solo album. Tell us about the album, what we can expect.
Well, it's frustrating to be pigeonholed, and that does happen a lot. Seem to get one of two reactions. Oh, it sounds like just like it always did, or oh, it doesn't sound like the old stuff. Both of which seem to be something of a negative reaction.
You can't win, eh?
Well, exactly. And so, with that in mind, and having been given the opportunity to explore the genre of Americana, which is the flavour of Riding the Blinds, the songs are all written by Nashville writers. It was something that I hadn't done before, and I think that, you know, I'm a singer that can turn his hand to different things. So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a try and see how I get on with it. So I spent last summer slaving away to make that album, and there it is, yes, as you say. But I'm already six tunes in to my next solo album, which is going to have a different direction again, and I hope to have it on sale for the tour that we've been talking about.
Oh, it's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, you've got to keep doing something, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I understand what you mean, where you're coming from there. Well, in just a moment, we're going to play Broken Back Road. Is there anything about that particular song that you want to say about it?
Well, I've never met Jade Bayer, who I believe is the writer of that song.
I thought you'd written that one.
No. All the songs from the album were written by Nashville country writers. I don't necessarily know that I'm qualified to be a country writer. It's not a genre that I'd explored before.
Right.
And these are not influences that I look back on and say, you know, that really speaks to me. It was an experiment. I had previously made an album called S1 Sessions with perhaps rather better known country songs like Amazed, for example, and lots of people have covered that song. And my fan base really responded positively to that kind of thing, and so I thought, okay, well, here's a pointer of something else that I should try, and this time, slightly less of a big production here and there, and more of an organic, rootsy feel.
Well, look, Peter, thank you very much for joining us on Phoenix FM today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Now, I should just tell you that this interview should have been done by my colleague Michelle Ward, who really loves your music, and she's really upset that she couldn't do it. So can you just say a quick hello to her, because she'll be listening and probably crying as we speak.
Oh, well, I hope you're not crying, Michelle. I'm very sorry I missed you. Pleasure to speak to Scott, and perhaps you and I can do this again at some future date. How's that? So have a good afternoon and enjoy this Broken Back Road.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter.
All right, mate. All the best.
Cheers. All the best. Bye-bye.
Cheers.